Thank you so much, Rabbi Shabtai. It is a tremendous chus to be here. And I had the privilege to come here for a simcha. I was here for a wedding last night. And I thought we'd use that to influence the topic to speak about. And we know we're in a time of terrible challenge for Klal Yisrael right now. And that has influenced so much of what we think about and talk about. And it's on all of our minds as it needs to be. And I thought that maybe for now, being that they did have the privilege to come here for a joyous occasion, maybe to spend a few minutes talking about the intersection of those two things, about the reality of this terrible ongoing war and of weddings. And the fact that indeed, not only are we continuing to have weddings throughout this period, but in Israel, if anything, they're increasing and they're happening all the more so, and they're happening under all circumstances. And that phenomenon has drawn international attention. And maybe specifically to say a little bit about that and a little bit about some experience I had with that and some halachic and hashkafic perspectives regarding that might be appropriate. Does that sound like a worthwhile topic? Okay, so let's go for that. So it happens to be that I had an inquiry from a prominent national news publication a few months ago that wanted to know what was going on with these Jews in Israel. It's not a Jewish publication, a national news publication in America that was seeing all these pictures of, weddings taking place in Israel, and the groom is in army uniform. And sometimes the bride is also in an army uniform. And the weddings are taking place on an army base, perhaps. And right after it's over, one or both of them is going off to war. What's going on here? Is there some kind of a Jewish law that says that you can't push off a wedding? Is that what's going on? Is that once the date is picked, then nothing can stop that? Is that the idea? The reporter was Jewish. They like to do something about spheres or something like that. There's certain dates I know on the calendar you can't have weddings. So they boxed in. Is that the issue? They can't wait. They couldn't find a different date on the calendar. But why is it that it's clearly nobody's dream wedding to walk down the aisle wearing an army uniform and to be on a military base and to separate right afterwards? So why can't they wait? Why are the weddings taking place under these circumstances? And the reporter also wanted to know, given, of course, the terrible questions of the moment, when one has to choose between a wedding and a funeral, what does Jewish law have to say about that? Are there rules and priorities that address that question? So those were her questions. And I spent some time talking to her about this. And as far as I can tell, this was a few months ago. This was right after the war started. And the article never came out, never ended up publishing about it. But it ended up getting much more publicity because I mentioned this discussion to Rav Asher Weisschlipa. And he has been mentioning it in his shiurim ever since. So it got much better publicity through him than it would have gotten through this newspaper, as widely read as this newspaper is. Definitely is much more effectively discussed through Rav Asher Weiss than through any newspaper. So it ended up being purposeful anyway. But essentially, the issue really is a complicated one. And there is quite a lot to say and to consider, both philosophically and halachically, about the issue. And just to begin with the question of the impression that we have that once the timing is set, that the show goes on no matter what, and that nothing gets in the way. So there is a sugya in the Gemara in the beginning of Maseches Ksubis, you might be familiar with Ksubis Daf Gimel Amid Beis and Dalet Amid Aleph, where the Gemara talks about a tragic situation where there is a mixture of joy and tears, where there is a couple that is about to get married, and they're past the point of no return, economically, essentially, that everything is in place and you can no longer put everything back. The food's going to go bad and all of the expenses have already been laid out and you can't turn back at this point. And one of the parents of the couple passes away. The Gemara talks specifically about the father of the chassan and the mother of the caliph, whatever reason, but one of the parents of the couple passes away right then. So then you have in front of you a funeral that needs to happen and a wedding that needs to happen. So what's the halacha? The Gemara says the show must go on, that the wedding takes place first, that the mace, the nifter, is placed in another room, and the wedding happens first. It's pretty incredible. And then, following that, then the funeral can happen. But once that's happened, so now we have another question. Because if you've had a wedding and a funeral, so now you have in front of you two other obligations. Shava Brachos and Shiva. So what happens then? So the Gemara says, first you have a week of Shava Brachos. And only after that, then is the Shiva going to take place. It's an extraordinary thing. And it's a technical problem also, because the Rishonim talk about how it works mechanically. Ultimately, we assume that both of these practices, Shavar Brachos and Shiva, are rabbinic practices, and therefore the rabbis have control over how they fall out. Hey Mamru, they can decide how to prioritize. It's still an extraordinary thing that they decided that the Shavar Brachos should take place first in their totality, and only then afterwards should the week of mourning happen. Some of the Rishonim had a more difficult problem to figure out because some felt that the first day of Shiva actually is a Torah obligation, and then it's an even more surprising idea if the rabbis overrode that Torah obligation to say, first have Shiva Brachos first. So however we understand the mechanics, one way or another, it's an extraordinary idea that the couple is told that this is going to take priority, that yes, the show is going to go on, we're going to have the wedding first, even before the funeral. And then, once the funeral has happened, the mourning is going to wait. The Shiva is going to wait, and a full week of Shiva Brachos is going to happen. And I don't imagine that what's happening here is that we have the pure, brisker, halachic man, and that the couple is asked to completely turn off their tears and forget about everything. The way the Gemara has that language in Moed Katan, that when one is sitting Shiva and Yontif starts and cuts the Shiva off, it happens sometimes, the Shiva will only last an hour even because the funeral took place right before Yontif. And the Gemara has that language of Asi Esei Derabim, Simcha Derabim, Ubevatel Avelos Deyochet, that the celebration of the public comes and cancels the mourning of the individual. And it seems somewhat harsh and a little bit overwhelming, the idea that one's moment of grief is going to be pushed aside for the Antif, and in that situation it doesn't even come back. The Shiva is cut off completely. So the idea that we're asked to completely control our emotions in such an absolute way, I don't know if it's necessarily the picture you may have of the absolute brisker halachic man, that the emotions are completely controlled by halacha and they don't express themselves in any other way. I think it's that here we find that the halacha is telling us that there's a mixture of emotions and we have to find a way for each of them to have their place and to figure out how they're going to be organized practically. And that's a part of the challenge of life. And sometimes it presents itself in a particularly challenging way. And we're fortunate to have a system that gives us these rules and that gives us a protocol to allow each to find its space or to give us a system in which those expressions can find themselves. So we do have somewhat of a structure for these kinds of scenarios, and there is a history there. But it's also very relevant to consider together with that the other question that the journalist asked as to what does take priority. If one has on their schedule both, let's say, a wedding to attend and a funeral to attend, so how do they decide? Is there a halacha? The question about that? Oh, okay. What does the Pasuk in Kohelet say? Okay, so is it so simple? Could be. Is anything so simple? So let's see. So on the one hand, it seems pretty cut and dry, actually the other way, that the Gemara does address the question of a clash between a wedding and a funeral. Is the Gemara in Ksubis. And the Gemara in the second parak of Ksubis talks about a traffic jam, that there is a wedding procession and a funeral procession coming at the same time. And they are meeting at a corner. They're meeting on the road. And the Gemara says, Mavirin esameis b'fnei hakala, that we ask the funeral procession to step aside so that the kala can come first, that we give priority to the wedding procession. And why that is explained, the Rishonim point out, the Gemara there doesn't tell us exactly why, but the Rishonim point out that it is a Mesachas Machos, one of the Mesachas Chitanos, explains why it is, that we have an idea that we show kavod to the living before kavod to the deceased. That as crucial as it is, the notion of kavod hames, as important as the concept of honor for the deceased is, a crucial idea, nonetheless, we prioritize even more honor of the living. Rav Shechter likes to point out that there are people who believe that the idea of kavod hames is a new concept that only begins when a person dies. When a person is alive, you can treat them horribly, you can do whatever you want. And then as soon as they die, kavod hames, now you have to be very careful. Achrimos, kedosha memor, now you all of a sudden have to start being respectful to people. And when they're alive, you can do whatever they want. And really, it's the other way around. That the idea is a concept of kavod habrios, that we have to be respectful to people all the time. And it's such an incredibly powerful concept that even after they're no longer alive and they're not aware of how they're being treated, we still have to treat them respectfully. So the idea of kavod hames is an extension of the concept of kavod hachaim. It doesn't start only when they die. So the primary kavod is to those who are alive. So even though we put tremendous emphasis on kavod hames, but there's yet a greater honor that is shown to the living. So in this clash, we have the priority given to the wedding procession. So on the one hand, it seems like you have here a pretty black and white ruling that when we have this conflict, when we have this choice, so priority is given to the living and priority is given to the wedding ceremony over the funeral ceremony. And if we were to formulate a slogan, we would say, "U'bachartu b'chaim." Choose life, and perhaps that's the answer, and perhaps that's the message. However, like everything, it's not so simple. The Ramban does assume that this is the rule across the board, that essentially that Gemara in Ksubis is telling us a policy, essentially, that in all such clashes, we give priority to the living, and that the wedding needs take priority over the needs of the funeral and everything that comes along with that. However, not everyone agreed. And prominently, the Rambam disagreed. The Rambam accepted the psak of the Gemara in its minimal sense. That yes, when it comes to the traffic jam, when it comes to this clash of the funeral procession and the wedding procession, so that's what the Gemara says, that yes, ma'avirin esameis b'fnei hakala. And yes, we have this idea that kavod hachaim takes priority over kavod hames. All of that the Rambam recognizes, but he limits it to that. So when it's a matter of kavod, so then yes, okay, priority will be given to the living, will be given to the wedding, and for those purposes, indeed, that's what the Talmud is telling us. But for other things, it's not necessarily the case. And for the question of where are you going to devote your attentions and whose needs are you going to take care of first that are not necessarily honor-based, then he says it's the other way around. And he points to your pasuk in Koheles. Although not exactly your pasuk in Koheles, which is interesting. He points to a pasuk two psukim later, which that shift in focus might be noteworthy, but he points to a pasuk which has the language kilev chachamim bebeis ha'evel, that the heart of the wise is in a house of mourning, and says the Rambam, therefore, for all other needs, we would focus first on those who are in a state of mourning before those who are in a state of celebration. So he takes issue with the Ramban on this point, and the commentaries on the side of the Rambam try to explain why he would take a different position. He's not making it up. There are sources that support that as well. And really, there's sources on both sides, essentially. So here, there's a Tosefta. There are a few other sources in the Masechtos Ketanos, the Masechtos Machos, that seem to give a little bit of conflicting impressions. But you do have such sources that suggest that for other purposes, indeed, we would prioritize going to a shiva house or going to a funeral before going to a Beis HaSimcha. That's what the Pasuk is talking about. And you might think, okay, a Beis HaSimcha, but not a mitzvah celebration like a wedding. But even so, yes, even a mitzvah simcha, maybe the priority is given to the Beis HaEvel. And the Pasuk, as you noted, that's those sources are quoting is actually the pasuk two psukim earlier in Koheles, Tov Leleches LeBeis HaEvel MiLeleches LeBeis HaSimcha, that suggests that it's preferable to be in a house of mourning than it is to be in a house of celebration. And again, we have to add the words, even a Simcha Shal Mitzvah, even a wedding celebration. So therefore, the Rambam takes this position, and he emphasizes that. Now, what's noteworthy is that if you look in the commentaries, there actually is quite a range of interpretations as to what that pasuk means, what that pasuk in Koheles is trying to tell us. And that itself is probably significant for us in terms of a hashkafic message, in terms of a little bit of direction and insight, especially for this moment right now, and to understand what exactly we are to glean from this whole back and forth. So why does the pasuk say, Tov Leleches, the Beis HaEvel, Meleches, the Beis HaMishkan? Why is that considered to be the priority? So some understand, probably the most intuitive interpretation, is to look to the end of the pasuk. The pasuk continues, V'hachai yitein elibo, that the survivors, the one who are alive, they should take to heart. They should consider what's going on. The pasuk also says, "Ki zeh sof kol adam." This is the end of every human. We should think about this. We should ponder this. And it sounds like it's saying that there is a introspective value here, that this is something that will be significant for Musar and to keep us on the straight and narrow path. The Gemara in the first parak of Brachos talks about what a person should do if he finds himself struggling with the Yetzirah. And the Gemara has a whole progression of steps, what one should do in order to fight off the Yetzirah. Gemara quotes the pasuk, La'olam yargiz adam, a person should always battle against the Yetzirah. And the last of the steps is Yazkir Yom HaMisa. You should remember the day of death. And you may be aware this was the topic of a debate, the whole history of the Musar yeshivas, when it used to be much more controversial. Today there isn't much of a controversy anymore about Musar or the yeshiva system. But 200 years ago, there was a major split between the Musar yeshivas and the non-Musar yeshivas, and a part of it centered around that Gemara. There was a whole debate that Gemara has a whole progression, and when you're fighting the Yetzirah, you should first learn Torah, and if that doesn't work, you should say Kriya Shema, and if that doesn't work, then you should remember the day of death, remember your mortality, and that will help keep you focused. And so some of the Bali Musar argued that, you see, this is the most powerful tool when nothing else works. So then you remember your mortality, and that apparently is the ultimate step. That's the step that comes last. So you see that kind of very heavy introspection is apparently what's recommended. And others responded, Soloveitchik talks about this in Halachic Man. He recounts the whole discussion. I believe it may have been Rebitzel Petterberg, who was one of the great Talmidim of Rebitzel Solanter, who had this argument perhaps with Chaim Bisker, maybe, who responded that that's not how to read it. The Gemara is saying that if A doesn't work, you go to B. If B doesn't work, you go to C. So only when you're desperate, when things are really in a bad shape, so then you go to the last step. But ideally, you'll be able to suffice with the earlier steps. So by us and Velazhin, so we're all healthy, so we can suffice with learning Torah. That'll help us fight the Yetzirah. So there's a whole back and forth about that. But essentially, the Gemara ends on that idea that if at least nothing else works, then Yaz Kiyom HaMisa, remember one's mortality, and that's going to be effective to fight the Yetzirah. So it sounds like that's what this pasuk is talking about, that v'chayitein alibo, that's why it is best for a person to encounter these kinds of experiences, which will help. A question about that? Mm-hmm. Correct.
When it comes to the people, it's instinctually much easier to feel bad for someone.
Interesting.
It's harder to share in their simcha and be happy for them.
So you're calling attention to the fact that there are some conflicting aspects, which is itself worthy to point out. So that also emerges from the fact that we find a number of interpretations here. So this first one is perhaps the most intuitive because of that language. And it may be that when the Rambam shifts the citation to the Pasuk Tu Psukim later, he's emphasizing that. He says, Kilev Chachamim Bevei Sa'evel. So the idea that that's where your heart should be, that's where your attention should be, he's maybe emphasizing that that's what he's calling attention to. But there are other interpretations, and there's one, maybe a little bit surprising, that calls attention to the part of the pasuk that says, Kizeh sof kol adam, that this is the end of every person. And therefore, why is that significant? So not only because of the Musar value, but some suggest that it's in the spirit of what Yogi Berra was quoted as saying, that you should always go to other people's funerals, because if you don't, they won't go to yours. Which sounds a little bit surprising for a couple of reasons. So first of all, it's got a problem with it, as you can figure out. But in addition to that, it seems counter to an attitude that we normally have. Right? So just 2 weeks ago, we read Parshas Vayechi, and in the beginning of Parshas Vayechi, so we find that Yaakov asks of Yosef that he should do for him a chesed shalemes, a chesed v'emes. And there we understand, Rashi tells us, there's also many interpretations of that as well, but Rashi tells us that the idea of the chesed emes is that we don't anticipate any payback, and that that's supposed to make it a purer chesed. So the idea that emphasis here is that you should look for reciprocity, that you should know that someday we're all going to die, and therefore make sure to attend the funerals of others and to take care of the needs of these categories of others, because someday you're going to need it too, is surprising because, first of all, like Yogi Berra didn't realize they're not going to be able to come to your funeral, but also we don't usually focus on the reciprocity, and that was what we emphasized, the Chesed Shel Emes, is that we're not looking for that. But it happens to be that Tosefta and Megillah does have that language. So those Rishonim who have that interpretation are not making it up, they're basing it on the Tosefta. Perhaps what it's getting at is not necessarily that you should look for the reciprocity, but essentially it is a moral statement that if you expect that this is something that should come to you when the time comes, so then it's only appropriate that you should consider it a priority to provide that for others, as essentially a ve'ahavta l'reicha kamocha ideal, that this is basic morality, recognize that this is something you are going to want, and therefore you should provide it for others, and understand that this is something that everyone needs. And perhaps that's the idea, and that's why it takes such a priority. Some understand the idea that by saying Zesov Kol Adam in the Pasuk, what it's getting at is that this is the last opportunity with this individual, that you have a chance now to attend the funeral of this person. This is the last chesed that you'll ever be able to do for that person. The wedding that you're going to miss, so hopefully they'll invite you to the bris. But this person whose funeral you might miss, there'll never be another opportunity to bring them into the umbrella of chesed by including them, because this is the last chance. And therefore, perhaps for that reason, it takes priority, which is also an interesting focus, also a different way of looking at it. And there are those who suggest that maybe it's a cost-benefit analysis, essentially, that when it comes to, say, nichum avelim, that's what we emphasize. So that is a double chesed, that you are benefiting the nifter, and you are benefiting also the survivors, benefiting the avelim. And when you attend a wedding, so then you are only benefiting the living. And therefore, if we were to weigh the mitzvos against each other, there's a greater accomplishment in taking care of the needs of the deceased. So if that's the consideration, it's interesting because we're trying to understand the Rambam's position. So that could work for the Rambam Lushitaso. That could explain the Rambam's position elsewhere, because the Rambam in Mishneh Torah ranks Bikur Cholim and Nichum Avelim. And the Rambam says that Nichum Avelim, the comforting mourners, is a double chesed, because he understands it to benefit the Avelim, the survivors, but also to benefit the mace, because the Gemara has a tradition, the Gemara Misach HaShabbos, that the Nifter continues to inhabit his house for the period of Shiva, and therefore one who comes to pay a Shiva call is benefiting the Nifter as well. So it's a chesed for the mace and a chesed for the living. So the Rambam says that it's a double chesed, and then he goes on to say that it seems to me, it's the language of the Chiddush, yearly, that if one has to choose between Bikur Cholim and Nichum Avelim, that he should prioritize Nichum Avelim. And that was a big surprise to some. The Radbaz and others comment that that's a little shocking, because Bikur Cholim may actually be considered Pikuach Nefesh under some circumstances, that we have an idea that Bikur Cholim can actually be life-saving. And if that's the case, you would think that that would have greater urgency no matter what. And the idea that because we're ranking Nichum Avelim as a double chesed, we should say that it would take priority over Bikur Cholim, that's quite a surprise. And there's a lot of literature about that, but this would be consistent then, that here we find the Rambam making this calculation here, and it's similar to what he says in Mishneh Torah about Nichum Avelim, that there is this dual chesed, that means it should rank higher. So perhaps that is consistent, maybe that would contribute to the explanation as well. The idea of ranking the mitzvos together was a discussion that you could find in the Shiltos, the Rav Chaigon, that was written. Rav Chaigon was one of the late Gaonim right before the Rishon in the 900s. So he summarized all of Torah, organized it by the Parshios. So he raises this question. He talks about the mitzvah of Chesed, one of the early Shiltos in Sefer Bereishis. So he talks about this question of how to prioritize. And he raises this issue of what should come first, a wedding or a funeral. And he comes at it from this perspective of trying to evaluate what is the greater mitzvah. And he notes that each one has an aspect that gives it greater strength. That on the one hand, a funeral has a certain power to it, because normally a kohen is not allowed to attend a funeral. But if it's a mace mitzvah and no one else is available, so then that overrides the prohibition and a kohen does attend the funeral. So we see that sometimes the need of the funeral can override prohibition. So apparently it has a special power to it. On the other hand, as others note as well, when it comes to the wedding, the marriage is a step towards populating the world and Sheves, so we know that that has a tremendous priority to it. So one might think that that should take priority. So he tries to evaluate, based on that kind of a metric, what should come first. And he leans, taking the Gemara in Ksubas, he says that Gemara seems to paskin the issue, and therefore he leans towards saying that the marriage should come first. So to say Kaddish, probably not, but that's its own sugya. But just conceptually, the idea that if there's no one else at all to take care of the funeral, that it would override that Isser, so that's a striking idea to begin with. So, hi. So I'm trying to a little bit, so we'll see how much we grab. I think I have 5 more minutes, so that's Tsar, it's called Tsar Ha'es, and the question of how much time you have and how much that causes. Let's see how much we can get in the next 4 minutes. So that's what the Shiltos writes, and there's a commentary on the Shiltos that was written by the Netziv. I think that was the first Sefer Hero. When he was a young man, the Netziv wrote the commentary on the Shiltos. That makes it all the more impressive. That was the first Sefer Hero. It was his commentary on the Sefer that most people hadn't heard of. So he wrote his commentary on the Shiltos, and there he discusses this question of how exactly to rank the two. And he essentially makes the distinction along these lines. He says it's true that Sheves is a high priority. The idea of populating the world, we do find that takes great importance. So if the question is that there's basically one team available, So it's a question of whether one is going to happen or not, or what's going to happen first. So then, indeed, the wedding should take priority over the funeral. But if they're both happening, and it's a question of your attendance at one or the other, so then you should do what is best for your spiritual development, what is best for your Musar considerations. And that he's tapping into this language, achayitena libo, all of these indications that there is an advantage spiritually for one to attend a funeral or a shiva house over a beis ha-simcha. So when we consider it from that perspective, the idea of what will be the most valuable for our own spiritual needs when events are happening one way or another, and it's a question of what are we going to participate in. So there's a lot to consider about the current moment and about this Yetzara and about the various issues that are conflicting and bumping into each other in front of us, in front of our very eyes. And the whole question of why attending weddings is so important to begin with is a fascinating question. And it is the outlier in the grouping of mitzvos of chesed, that most of the chasadim that we have, bikur cholim and nichum aveilim and hachnasas orchim and staka and everything in that category, it's usually somebody is in a bad situation and we need to help them. Somebody is in mourning, somebody is sick, somebody is without lodging or without resources, so we need to help them. And simchas chasen and kala is an outlier in that here you have a situation where people are happy, and we need to help them be happier. We need to help them in their happiness. And it's an interesting discussion why that is, and there's a lot more to say about that than we have time for now. But a part of it is, as some sort of explain, is that the reality is that man is a social animal and that needs to connect with others, and the Jewish man is even more of a social animal. And if one were to experience the happiest day of their lives without the people who are dearest to them present, so then that would be a loss of such significance that turns everything in the other direction. And therefore, Chazal understood that here there's a situation where even though it's a happy moment, there is a crucial need for Jews to be together during that time and to be, in this case, mishtatef, not in the tsar, but in the simcha of others, and that becomes an urgency of the moment. So when we consider what is a priority right now with everything going on, so the idea of hachayitena libo and the notion that we need to be reminded of our mortality, unfortunately, l'davonenu harav ha'atzum, Klal Yisrael has been reminded of its mortality to a degree unprecedented in my lifetime, unprecedented in the past many, many decades. So the question of whether we need to be reminded of our mortality more right now, perhaps that's not necessarily the greatest focus. But the statement that despite the fact that people are trying to wipe us out, but we are going to step forward and keep building Jewish families and do so with the presence of other Jews being mishtatef in that simcha and creating that unity that has held us together and carried us through for all of these centuries despite everything that has been thrown at us. Perhaps that statement of unity in that process of defiantly continuing to build Jewish families despite everything is as valuable a statement as everything else towards our needs for growth and spiritual development, and in the spirit of what the Nitziv is saying of how we have to seek out together with the needs of Jewish society whatever will contribute most to our Musar development. Perhaps there is a strong vote to be made that has a tremendous contribution to be made. And we have to hope that together with the holy intentions that indeed should be what is reflected in these moments, that we should see Jewish families built and we should see Jewish unity enhanced. And that should bring about genuine shalom, not only for Jewish people, but for the entire world. The Karev Yameinu. Amen. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
We're going to start momentarily with my Adler. We're just taking a 1 minute break.